Session number 11206, reel 4.
Mr. T.R. Thornthwaite, Reel 4. What was the accommodation like at Ravensworth Castle, Mr. Thornthwaite?
Well, when we first went there, on the slope behind the castle, there was a big field, and we're in bell tents again there. We had palliasses, and we used to go to and fill them up with straw. The bales of straw used to be dropped off, and you break them open to fill your palliasse with straw and sleep on the grass with your palliasse, and it wasn't bad. For the first few nights it was all right, and then it started to pour down a rain, and the water just poured in the bell tents one side and out the other, and you had to hang on to your bedding, and with it being straw, it just sopped all the water up, and everything was soaking. So they brought some boards up and put them in the tents to try and keep us off the ground. But the bedding and everything was all soaking wet, so it was hopeless. So they took us into the castle. During the day it was, and the long corridors were little rooms off them all over the place, and they said, just find somewhere and put your blankets down and stay there the time we're here. Of course, when we come on at night time and there was no lights, the people were wandering around, they were lost, and they were shouting, where's so-and-so, where's B Company, where's that? But at least it was dry, it was out of the rain. And I always remember the people, the public who was watching the tattoo, they used to get a little cushion, flat thing, when they paid the money to sit on, because it was all just the earth, the grass. Well, when it started raining, they put these on their head to keep them from the rain, but the dye was coming out of these cushions and it was running down their face and put the mess they were in. When we finished the tattoo, we started a recruiting drive it was, and we marched from Gateshead all the way around the county, different Chesley Street and all these places, Durham, March, and then we stopped at each place at night. We do about 14, 15 mile a day, sometimes 20, and then we stopped these places and we slept on the floor in the drill holes. And the people were unbelievable. When you went out at night, they wouldn't let you buy beer. They bought the beer. They used to invite you in the houses for a meal, your supper. And no matter where you went, they were very good. And we marched all the way around and eventually ended back again in Catterick. Then from Catterick, we eventually entrained and went down to Blackdown near Woken.
What date was this?
That was just before Christmas, 1934. Is it? No. Maybe Christmas. Before Christmas, 34. Christmas, 1934.
And what was the accommodation situation down there?
Well, there were proper barracks, you know, the same again, Woken, there were proper barracks with a big square. We moved into barracks down there, but I was with the 40. I have a photo there of the people there. You don't want to see it or after. We were on a draft for India, so we were put in a different barracks from the battalion, the Royal Engineers. And we moved over there, and we weren't doing any training. The battalion was starting to train again, but our job was to clear a forest, chopping trees down with big cross saws and axes and that. And we'd done that for about 6 weeks before we actually moved away. The battalion, as I mentioned before, was an experimental battalion for the War Office. So any scheme the War Office wanted to put into practice to try it out and find how it worked. Now, they give it to the Durhams at Woken. And the first one was transport. So they asked if anyone, drivers, a step out and all the rest of it. Well, some people never drove in their life, but they stepped out. And they brought these trucks, motorcycles, cardioids. The cardioid was very similar to the wartime carrier. But instead of a steering wheel, it had a lever each side, and each lever controlled each truck. Some of the cardioids were disappearing in a coal yard, and they couldn't control them. They were knocking walls down in the barracks. The trucks were going off in the woods there. They were disappearing amongst the woods. Motorcycles were being run over by the trucks. But they got it organized a bit.
And this was going on with the battalion, but you weren't a part of this.
Oh, no. We were in these woods chopping the trees down, you see, where we watched all this, and it was like Casey's Court watching it. It was unbelievable. But we had a sergeant, you said, did he ever take offence against any of the officers? Well, we had a sergeant there, and he was a right nasty character. Well, what we had to do, we stand one each side of a big tree with your axes, and you chop by this side, and then before you felled it, you used to shout timber, so everybody got out their own. Well, you always used to aim these trees at this sergeant, and when it was halfway down, and we shout timber, but we never did catch him with the trees.
Do you recall his name?
No, I can't remember his name now, but I always know him. He's a proper ferret. You know, he had no sense of humour, and others, they were strict, but they had a sense of humour, and they'd give you a break and let you have a smoke and then carry on again.
And this sergeant wasn't like that?
No, he was, well, he wasn't like by his own people, you know. His own colleague sergeant never got on with him. There was one in India like that, and when we moved in a place in India, we had to go on fatigues to the married quarters and get all the boxes and take them into the square ready for transport. And this sergeant, he was a right nuthin. Another one, when he eventually got to the place where we moved to, and he opened his boxes, they were full of oil, old oil, people had poured it in. Yeah, they had their own ways, but rotten leg. But as I say, that was up to February 1935. And then we marched away. We went to Southampton. And I always remember that morning at Southampton, they marched down onto the jetty there, and the band was just playing. There was this big troop ship, the Navassa. Yeah, the Navassa. And all the officers' wives was there from other regiments, and we went on this troop ship. And this is when I got made a Lance Corporal for the voyage, and my job was to find people for these patrols on the troop ship itself, fire watch doing. And I could never find one, never.
What was the accommodation on the troop ship like?
Let's see, big open holds with an open staircase walking down. There'd be about four decks from main deck down. On each deck, on either side, you had the tables housing about 12 men down each side, maybe about a couple of hundred, 260 I think it was, on each deck. You ate at these tables. Your kit, you had to put it in your kid bags and push it up amongst pipes and that, but nothing had to be seen. That would all be, because the ship's captain used to come around every morning, inspect all decks and everything for cleanliness and laid out and toilets and all that. At night time, you used to have to queue up and go to the hammock store, which was down below, and you queued up there and you drew your hammock. And this was another hilarious part of the army at sea, with the hammocks. I don't know if you've ever seen a hammock. And you used to fight for to get a hook to hang her up. And you had two blankets in, and it was the strings and whatnot. And you'd climb in, and the thing used to fold up, and you were like a woman rat in a cage. You couldn't breathe. I could never sleep in them. I used to put mine on the floor, just sleep on the floor under the table somewhere. But some old soldier there, I don't know where he come from, it was one of the crew, told one of our lads, he said, get two pieces of stick. You go to the cook and whether break the boxes up with the stuff and get two pieces of stick and put one on, spread the top of the hammock out, put one there and one at the bottom. He says, and that keeps it open when you're sleeping in it. So we got some pieces of stick and put them in and got in champing, and there was crack, crack, and the stick was snapping in the full and there was blokes falling out. It was, and 200 and odd men sleeping there, and the blooming, the air, the fumes, and the ventilation for each deck was where the staircase, open staircase was. There was a well in the middle, and there was a big canvas chute about a meter in diameter, and it used to go right up, and it was up on the deck, and it had like a big fin on, and the wind when the ship was moving, the wind used to come down here, and that was your ventilation for each dome. And I found that the best place, for all it was cold, the best place, I used to go down where the end of the chute was, where it was tied off, and I used to sleep there, and it was like a howling gale going, but with a blanket on it. I preferred that than sleeping amongst on the deck, because you couldn't breathe, that much smell.
So it must have got worse as you went into hotter climates.
Oh, yes. Well, when it got hotter, they allow you to sleep on deck. So you take your blankets, and everybody used to go up on deck. Again, as the weather got hotter, the sun and the Mediterranean, they used to put canopy covers over. Well, there were two, one there and about a foot, another one. And it used to protect you underneath from the sun. Well, I found that if I climbed up, it was about the height of the ceiling, and I used to climb up the rail and get on and lie on that lower canvas, and it was nice and comfortable and cool and everything. And I think two nights I'd done that, and then I bloomin' woke up and somebody poked me with a stick, and it was the orderly officer. And he cursed me for being up there. He says, if you rolled, you'd roll off the side of the ship, because the ends was open, you see. So I lost that behind him. But as I say, we used to sleep on the deck. And then at 4:30 in the morning, the Lascars, Indian crew, used to, with a big open-ended blooming fire hose, used to come round doing all the decks. So you had to clear out quickly. And then you had to roll your hammock up. And it was Navy fashion them days, because you rolled your hammock up and they had a thing with a circular loop on. And if it didn't go through there, you got it back again to wrap up again. It had to be tidy and done properly. Then you hand them in, it had your name on, you wrote your name on, and at night again you went and collected it.
What was the food like on the ship?
Well, the first few days you didn't care what the food was like, because everybody was sick. I wasn't too bad, because one of the old crew told me to eat dry bread. He says, get some dry bread, he says, and eat that, it'll tell you. And again, I found it was running around with a job to do, it sort of took your mind off a lot and didn't affect me. But the only time I felt like sick was when the toilets were like a common trough and little compartments with a hole in them. Well, you had some people sitting on them and other people were being sick in them. And as the ship went along and then as it went up, everything came back again. And then it went that way. and the stench and the floor, you know, the sick. And that's the only time I felt really like sick. But once we got used to it, nothing bad. The food was, again, really basic. Bread, margarine and jam for breakfast. Stew for the meal. And you had to take your turn at an orderly and go up and queue hours before it was due. You had to take your Dixies and that and go and put them, get in a queue at where you got the food. And there was a long, long queue of all these things with a bits of paper in with the name of the mess so-and-so, and you stand. And then you eventually got your turn, and he give you a ration, and you came down, and then you at the end of the table had to dish it out onto the plates and pass them down to different people. I remember one bloke called Oswald. He's from over here somewhere. He's a really crude character. He used to buy a tin of pineapples with his money. And he'd, on the mass table, he would open it and eat all the pineapples, and then he'd be sick in the tin and put the lid down and push it down the table. Well, of course, that used to put half them off the meal as a start.
There was there a canteen where you could spend some money on the boat?
There was, but all you could buy was biscuits and cigarettes, you know, cigarettes and biscuits. There was beer. You could get beer, but the beer was what they call revolver brand. It was like treacle. You know, flat, no life in it. And some of the blokes used to go and get their beer. But there used to be a lot of Crown and Anchor played on the decks all over. And then another thing I noticed, there was more barbers set up than I ever seen. You know, bloke would have scissors and comb, and he'd start up and barber, and he was all over the place and paid a shilling for a haircut, or whatever it was, sixpence.
Were the NCO's quarters of a better quality than the men's?
Well, there's no NCO's quarters.
Well,
I say no NCO. The officers had their cabins, you know, two maybe share a cabin.
Was that resented by the men?
No, not really, because they didn't see it. You know, they didn't see this sort of thing. I mean, they used to come down and hold the nose and inspect, oh, where we... And another thing is, this open staircase, the officers' wives used to come down, because when they packed the kit onto the boat, when they first got on, that they put stuff not wanted on voyage, and it used to go down the hold. Then the women found that they wanted this and that, and so they used to go down this stair. And they used to come down like this, down the stairs.
Holding the nose.
Until they got down the bottom, and they used to go and get whatever they wanted and come out.
So there are wives travelling with the officers?
Yes, yes. In them days, you had the sergeant's wives, everything used to travel abroad.
But of course, the men, there wasn't any of the men's wives, were there?
I don't think so. Well, there wasn't when I went, because we're all young, you see. There was no married ones amongst us. These were all as people from other red, not ours draft, other people being going back to regiments and things like that, you see. It was very boring, a troop ship. We used to have boxing at night. There was no such thing as film shows or nothing like that in those days. We used to just sit and talk. It used to be very pleasant, looking over the side.
And what duties were you performing on the ship? You said that you were a Lance Corporal at
well,
this time.
The only thing I had to do was to get 24 men at this for this fire point duty when it was our turn, you know. Then get them, warn them, and then pray them at night. And the sergeant used to come along and see everything was all right. And then he had to take them around, all these, drop them off. And I think I mentioned about some of the old hands there that, you see them fasten the laces and whatnot and dropping, they're counting the positions because they knew the good positions. Some was bad, some was in the married quarters, some was up on the top, others was way down where the sleeping quarters is. And so they'd have it all worked out by the numbers, and they'd drop out and then drop in again, drop out. And then you had them all doing this, all manoeuvring. We had... You had canvas trousers on and a shirt, and sand, you always put sand shoes on when as soon as you got on a ship. And you had a bandolier with a little pouch on with a card in, and that was telling you what your duties was at the fire point, what you had to look for. And I went round with the orderly officer, because he used to go round at night time and inspect all these positions with you. And I went to where all the showers were, salt water showers. I couldn't find this bloke where he's supposed to be standing at this point, but we could hear the shower going, and here he was under the shower, and he undressed, and he was standing under the shower.
And was he charged?
He's charged for leaving his post, because he was supposed to stand there. And I mean, it was very important on the troop ship with all their men. I mean, the fire could have started quite easily in them places.
Was the washing facilities adequate for the number of men that you had?
Well, there were trough things. The point is, you didn't have any strict routine. You used to do PT a lot, but you had a lot more time, so there wasn't such a rush. Just a trough. Most of it was salt water, of course, and you couldn't wash properly. And we used to do PT every day, boat drill once a day. And then we had a canvas thing set up about maybe the size of this room, about 4 feet deep. And it was set up, and the crew used to fill it with salt water. And it was next to the rail. And we used to swim in there and dive in, and then we had this game called Shitty Shankers. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Well, what it is, you have a judge and a committee, and you start off with the members, and then somebody will be charged or something, and then the judge used to say, what shall we do with this so-and-so? And then he used to put the heads together and decide on a punishment, different punishments, you see. And I remember once they were all round, and all the ship's crew and the captain on the bridge used to look down watching it, all the antiques. Well, this crowd was sitting, and a lad called Judge Hardy, he was the judge. He says, I spy a spy. What shall we do with him? And they says, we'll throw him in the swimming pool. It was the captain of the ship. They went up, they grabbed the captain, threw him in the thing, and he took it all in good part. You see the humour of it, it's good. But we had one day, a lad stood on the side rail to dive into this thing, and for some reason he fell backwards and he fell into the sea. Well, I mean, I don't know what speed the boat goes, but within minutes, anything, it's away at the back there. Anyway, they got a boat off, and they got thrown to words where this lad, somebody threw a life belt over, and he mounted into the life belt, and he was sort of sitting in the life belt, and the boat went towards him, and when the boat was about 3 yards away, he got off to get to the boat, and he just disappeared, so he drowned. That was one fatality we had on the troop ship.
Was there much illness on board the ship?
No, there was a small hospital there, holding about 6 beds. I don't know. I mean, I never heard of any other people there, but you got the ordinary small illnesses, people with bilious or something like that. You had a sick parade every day, as you would in the camp.
I didn't ask you, but had you been injected before you left England?
Oh, yes, we had all our inoculations and everything. I have a pay book with a list of them all in there. We used to have all this, and I don't think the wartime people had them, from what I gather, because that lad that you interviewed, the hospital, the medical dome, he said something about they used to have to check up to see the full-time, the pre-war people, for the inoculations, but they didn't seem to bother with the, for some reason, I don't know. And in them days, we called in, I think the first place we called in was Port Said. It took us 10 days to sail from Southampton to Port Said. At Port Said, we went ashore and we fell in and we done a route march just for exercise. And at the same time, they were putting the coal on the ship because they were all coal fired in them days. I always remember they had a great big gangplank at one part of the ship and another at the front or the back. And these natives carrying the baskets of coal, and they were all going in one and in and then coming all empty like this, just like an ant trail, filling this. And when they finished, it took them all day, and when they finished, everything in the ship was covered in coal dust. Every, your clothes, the decks, everything.
And how long were you at Port Said?
Just one day. And then as soon as we called up, The officers and all the families went ashore, but then we sailed away again and down the Suez and on to India, to Bombay.
How long did the journey take?
It took about 21 days, I think. I think it was about 21 days.
Had you been looking forward to going abroad when you joined the army? Had you any visions of being sent abroad?
I never thought about it when I joined it. I knew nothing about the army. I knew nothing about what happened. And when I look back now, I think it wasn't so long after the First War, you know. I mean, when I compare the time after this last war. But I never thought about going abroad. But because the raisins hadn't been abroad, at least not there. I have a cutting there, I'll show it after, about the raisins. They're very interesting.
When you got to Bombay, you would obviously go ashore, and you were a reinforcement unit or an exchange unit.
Yeah. Well, when we got to Bombay, and we anchored outside the bay, outside the Grand, or what do you call it. And I remember there was, on deck, there was dragonflies about that size, and it used to light up, and they were flying on the deck from there. And we were saying, mosquitoes, because we didn't know. And we were covering ourselves with blankets against these things, and getting me dragonflies. The next day, Lightless took us to the dunes, and that was really the first start of, you know, everything was strange. The smell, you could smell it as you got ashore on the jetties, and there was a women's organisation there, like the WES sort of thing. And I always remember they gave us a bar of Lux soap each, for some reason. A bar of Lux soap, a pot of tea, and a bun of some kind. And then we fell in. And oh yeah, another thing that stood out a mile, we had KD that we got in England, down to here, and shirts, and great big topies. They weren't the proper ceremonial ones, like they were a pith helmet. And I, looking at the people standing on the jetty that came to guide us, to fall us in, and the marches up to the Bombay, the barracks at Calabar Point. And they were like ebony, brown. And the KD, they were smart. The leather belts, pouches was shining, marvellous. You know, I looked at them, I couldn't believe it. We looked at us, we're like a lot of tramps. And we fell in, and they marched us up to, through Bombay, and up to Calabar Point, which was the barracks at Bombay. And again, the barracks was nothing like what they were in England, totally different altogether. You know, the big airy barrack rooms, and big high ceilings, and fans going, and big verandas. The sea was about 200 yards away. And, oh, it was beautiful.
And how many men was there to a room?
There'd be about 20 odd, I think, about the same, 20 odd. But you had more space, you know, tons of room.
And how were you received when you got to the barracks?
That's right. We went there for the first night at Dum. All the old people there wanted to come around, and they're all, what's happening here? What's it like in England? And you know, because in those days you got this this song about the Bookshire year, because you'd done about a year or something and a half in England, like we did, and then you went abroad, and you always spent all that time in India, and you always did one extra year. You know, you'd do 8 years before you come home, because you signed up for 7 and 5, but you always done a Bookshire year. And then came home. And the battalion that we joined, the 2nd Battalion, had been moving, the move through India, and they'd been up the Northwest Frontier and them, and they're moving down in preparation for coming home, you see. And that's when we joined them, when they're doing a last stint in Bombay. And you used to do 6 months in Bombay, and then 6 months in Doolally, and then change around like this.
Where was Doolally?
Doolally is, you know, the old dunes. It's about a day's train ride away from Bombay. There were six big barrack rooms, a little canteen, and there was nothing else. You could see on the Mayadam, as they call it, just like a shrub grass sort of. You could see it for miles, and that's all there was, nothing there. And that's why they said Dul Ali Tap, where they used to go mad at times, because there was nothing to do, drive you mad. I used to do a lot of running. I used to bought an old woolen vest, and I used to put that on and go and run at night time. I used to run for miles and miles, and then come back and get a shower.
Why was the interchange between Bombay and Dul Ali every 6 months?
They would have been all totally mad if they'd done any longer than 6 months there, you see. So the idea was to bring you back to Bombay, a bit civilization, and then, you know, back again.
It's nothing to do with the hot season in Bombay moving
out. No. The temperature was about the same. It was, Bombay was clammy. There was no difference in the climate. It was just that it was no life at all. You wouldn't survive long like that, living that way. Mm.